One out of every six Kentuckians, including one in four children, is food insecure. That's according to the state's Department of Agriculture and its commissioner, Ryan Quarles.
I can see a strategic plan that puts more resources towards the Farm to Food Banks Trust Fund, which is a program that helps buy edible food from farmers. It would buy food that otherwise would rot on the vine and distribute it to those in need through our food bank.
On this week's Eastern Standard, our guests, including Commissioner Quarles, will discuss efforts to create a healthier, more sustainable Kentucky, specifically through home gardening and urban farming. We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment to the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. On this week's program, home gardening and urban farming, and we're going to expand that conversation to include the issue of hunger in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. I have guests in the studio that we'll be introducing in just a few moments, and we're going to begin the program by speaking with Kentucky's Commissioner of Agriculture, Ryan Quarles. And actually, our program, somewhat unexpectedly, timely this morning, the Hunger Initiative was announced by Commissioner Quarles this morning. The Hunger Initiative is being called a first-of-its-kind effort in Kentucky to bring together farmers, charitable organizations, faith groups, community leaders, and government entities to begin a dialogue to help reduce hunger in Kentucky. Commissioner Quarles has made reducing hunger in both the rural and urban parts of the state a major priority during his time in office. And we're going to get to know a little bit about that effort and the concerns of Commissioner Ryan Quarles in this first segment of the program. I spoke with Commissioner Ryan Quarles, I think it was Tuesday, a couple of days ago, about the Hunger Initiative.
Yes, well, thanks for having me. Kentucky is known as being a strong agricultural state. We have a strong heritage, rich tradition, and most of our counties still have a strong agricultural presence. One thing that I've found disheartening is the unfortunate reality that one in six Kentuckians go to bed hungry, one in four school children don't know where the next meal is coming from, and I believe that the Department of Agriculture is best suited to facilitate a discussion, a dialogue, so to say, about hunger in Kentucky. And so this week we'll be rolling out a first-of-its-kind effort called the Hunger Initiative, where we hope to bring together many of the key factors and players that can help contribute towards developing a strategic plan throughout the Commonwealth to deal with hunger.
So what are the causes of hunger in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? One in six Kentuckians being affected. Is it a matter of just economic realities, people living in poverty?
It's a variety of reasons. And one thing that we want to do with the Hunger Initiative is to not take anything for granted. We want to truly understand the problem before we go out and seek solutions to that undefined problem. And so starting this week, we're going to start talking about the causes of hunger in Kentucky. Hunger has a lot of different faces for a lot of different reasons. And so one thing we will do is have a discussion about what causes it, what causes certain populations to be affected by this, what causes them to be brought into that certain population or being brought out of it for economic reasons or other reasons. One thing that we know is that hunger disproportionately affects vulnerable populations, the elderly and the young in Kentucky. So we want to spend some time to truly identify the problem before seeking solutions.
When you talk about talking about these issues, discussing the causes, is there research involved? And where do you go to get that information?
Yes, so we are bringing together a collaborative effort of people from our research institutions, our grocery store operators, even our farmers, our church community, our charitable organizations. And so we really hope to have a cross-tabulation of a lot of different opinions There will be a lot of research, especially from higher education, involved in this initiative so we can better understand this. We'll have a specialist with a background in rural sociology that knows Kentucky well involved. Of course, there's been a lot of effort already to address hunger in Kentucky that we will use and piggyback off of in the years to come.
You've mentioned that Kentucky has a long agricultural history. People have been growing things here for years. And, of course, in most places in our country, do you have a sense of how Kentucky fits into the picture? Are things worse here than in Ohio, in Tennessee, in Indiana, in Virginia?
Again, every state's different. Every community is different when it comes to addressing hunger. And we're going to have regional meetings across the state over the next year to make sure that we don't make the mistake of putting a cookie-cutter approach towards a regional issue across Kentucky. For example, hunger may be a very different type of issue in eastern Kentucky as it might be in downtown Louisville. And so we're going to have a series of meetings across the state to help better understand what's working in different communities, what's not working, is there duplication involved, or is there a model, one area of the state that can be scaled up in other areas. It's important to really spend a lot of time understanding the problem. And I think the solution is going to be multifaceted. I can envision a strategic plan that involves gardening. I can see a strategic plan that puts more resources towards the Farm to Food Banks Trust Fund, which is a program that helps buy edible food from farmers. It would buy food that otherwise would rot on the vine and distribute it to those in need through our food banks. And so we really think that this is going to be a long-term strategic approach.
You mentioned gardening, and of course many of our listeners have come across community gardens in their towns. Even people who live in bigger cities will oftentimes experience community gardening. I've heard this term, though, recently called urban farming. What is the difference between urban farming and community gardening?
Well, urban farming, again, is multifaceted. It's an approach where people can get engaged in farming, whether it's rooftop gardens or vertical farming. There's a lot of discussion about it in Lexington and Louisville about how people can get engaged in their own backyards or rooftops or wherever the sun's shining to grow something for themselves. You know, even here at the Department of Agriculture, I actually built a garden just last week that our dedicated employees can help work on, and we'll grow food here in Frankfort and distribute it to a local pantry that needs it. We garden in my family growing up, and as you know, some of the most nutritious food you can grow and buy is from your own backyard. And so it's important to realize that even if you are not affected by hunger, gardening is a great way to understand science better, to understand the environment better, and also get your hands dirty and grow something nutritious in your own backyard.
What about the role of the farmers markets and efforts to folks who to bring their produce for sale? Is that likely to help make an impact
in
the hunger
absolutely.
Initiative?
We are fortunate in Kentucky to have a lot of farmers markets. We have farmers markets in 106 of our 120 counties, over 170 different locations for farmers markets. They're becoming more popular every year, especially with the local food movement catching fire across the state. And one of the things we've identified already is that those who can't afford food are sometimes at a disadvantage when shopping at a farmer's market. And one thing we'd like to do is increase the availability to use food stamps and EBD cards at farmers markets, something that's already being done. Another effort is to provide extra funding so that a dollar worth of produce at a local farmers market can take it further. In Lexington, for example, they have a double dollars program where every dollar that a food stamp recipient uses at a farmers market is matched by an additional dollar by a local foundation so that those in need can buy nutritious, locally grown food, just like everybody else, and also help promote local agriculture.
Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles, you mentioned churches and community groups and organizations. how can organizations like food pantries and service organizations that are already involved in trying to help others, how can they benefit or how can they extend their services as a result of the hunger initiative that you're working on?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is take an inventory across the state about what's working and what's not working. And so we encourage our local food pantries and those involved in the distribution side of helping those in need to get involved and really get involved in these regional meetings. Of course, we encourage anybody who's interested with the Hunger Initiative to contact us. In fact, we have a website link where individuals can sign up and say, hey, I'd like to help out. And that address is kyagr.com/hunger. And we really would encourage anybody who has an interest to contact the Department of Agriculture and get on board with the Hunger Initiative, and we will let you know when you're part of the state talking about this issue.
What is the most effective way to really have an impact? Is it better for organizations that are already established to kind of shift gears or shift their alignments and come to your department offering their resources? Or is it, you know, would you like to see people starting new initiatives, new food collaborative efforts and so forth?
Well, again, we want to better understand the problem before we suggest solutions. And I think that's one of the most intriguing parts about hunger in Kentucky is that it's not fully understood. And that's why I'm so proud to have industry leaders from our grocery stores to our faith communities to those in the distribution network and even farmers involved in the Hunger Initiative to better understand the problem. And I've been in government for 6 years now. And one of the things that I've learned is that you really need to better identify the problem before suggesting solutions. So we're going to take our time to really understand and take a deep dive and understand the problem before suggesting solutions.
And Commissioner Ryan Quarles, once again, that information on how people can interact with you or with the department or with others involved in the Hunger Initiative?
That's right. Just visit our webpage at kyagr.com/hunger. And we'll be rolling out this initiative on June 2nd in Shelby County.
Commissioner Ryan Quarles, thank you so much for being with us on Eastern Standard.
Thank you so much.
On this day of the rollout of the Hunger Initiative by the Commissioner of Agriculture and his department, we are discussing home gardening and urban farming on Eastern Standard. How can it affect hunger in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? How can it affect your family and our communities? We're interested in hearing from you, and we're going to introduce to you in just a few moments a couple of guests in the studio. We have Michelle from Berea Urban Farm and Abby from Sustainable Berea. We'll also be meeting Ryan from seedleaf.org, a Lexington-based community gardens program. And we're going to hopefully hear from you. We're interested in your stories about home gardening, maybe the family customs and traditions of gardening, or maybe something that you've revived now that you have started your own family or have your own home. We're interested in your stories, your questions, your comments during this week's Eastern Standard. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Post a message on the WEKU Facebook page or the website at weku.fm. Or feel free to pick up the phone. We'll be glad to get you on the air by telephone at 800-621-8890. That email address, once again, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at wekuest and send us a message that way. We'll get back to our conversation on home gardening and urban farming in just a few moments on this week's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. On this week's Eastern Standard, home gardening and urban farming, we've just heard from Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles about a new initiative, the Hunger Initiative in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and we're going to learn more about that as time goes by and as the efforts of the Department of Agriculture move forward. But right now, we're going to meet two folks who've joined us from Berea. They're here in the studio at WEKU. Michelle Flannery is production manager for the Berea Urban Farm. Michelle, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us, John.
Also with us, Abby Adams, and Abby is program manager for Sustainable Berea. Thank you, Abby.
Thank you.
And we will, in a few minutes, we'll meet Ryan Cook, director of seedleaf.org. But let's talk about the Berea Urban Farm and Sustainable Berea. First of all, let's start with Michelle. Why don't you tell me about the Berea Urban Farm? That's a new term to me. I mean, I go back years and years and years when people, I believe, are starting to do a little bit of maybe they grow some crops in their yard, on their lawn, or something that would be a little different than the traditional backyard garden. Is that what we're talking about? Using your space in an urban setting as a place to grow things that we can eat?
It is in a couple ways. It's a new term also because it's a new farm. So it's the farm's first full year of production this year. And so we are a 1.4-acre plot in Old Town Berea.
This is in the city.
In the heart of downtown. So if you're doing your shopping for your handcrafted mugs in Berea, you can just swing by and see and see what we're growing. And that's part of the appeal of the urban farm, is because we are not in a rural location. We are accessible to more of the population, which is good for generating a local food economy and getting people excited about food and offering classes on the farm and showing this is how a carrot grows. This is watching the tomato be a small plant to a big, beautiful fruiting plant. So
this is a demonstration farm or an educational effort for people who may have never had contact with agriculture live and in person. They've never been out in the fields, as it were?
Partly. The phrase we're using is an educational market garden. And so part of the Berea Urban Farm's mission is that of education, so offering classes and workshops and demonstration plots. So we are experimenting with growing tomatoes out of straw bales or growing potatoes vertically and showing these gardening techniques that people could take to their home space as they're walking by on the street or driving by. But we also are a market garden, so we also work on providing high-quality local food to local businesses and local residents. So sort of a combination of education and market.
But this is not a community garden. This is not what we would call a CSA, community sustainable agriculture?
Yeah, we have plots on the farm that are available for community members to grow. So if you don't have access to land in your own space, you are welcome to rent out a plot for the year for a small fee. We are looking to expand the space available for community growing, and so we would like to make that a component of the farm while also not the farm in its entirety.
Michelle Flannery is production manager for the Berea Urban Farm, and let's turn to Abby Adams of Sustainable Berea. Abby, tell me what Sustainable Berea is all about.
Yeah, well, Sustainable Berea is a nonprofit organization, and we're in our 11th year right now. Historically, we have been about alternative energy, household resilience, relocalizing the food economy, and education of most things sustainable. But in the more recent years, we have found that our focus has really been about food. And there's some reasons for that, specifically because there are some very real food security issues in Berea, in our town, and we wanted to be able to address that. But education is a large piece of that. Every event we do, there's never an event that we do for the sake of just having an event. There's always an educational component to all of those. And really bringing people to the table is what we think is the most important part of it, bringing the community together and getting everybody informed and able to take action.
You use the term food security or food insecurity, and I know Commissioner Quarles was speaking about that. That's a relatively new use of the term, in my opinion, as well. What are we talking about? Are we just plain talking about poverty?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I don't know where the term came from necessarily, but I can say that for our area in Berea, for instance, I was just looking up the most recent statistics the other day, 30% of the Berea population falls below the national poverty line, compared to 14.8% nationally. 23% of Berea households receive public assistance, such as food stamps or SNAP. So it does have to do with, you know, food security, and specifically 75% of students in Berea are on free or reduced lunch. So food security has to do with poverty, but it's really more about access to food, be it local, you know, we would love for it to be local, you know, healthy food, but really it's food in general.
I mean, we live in a country that is, you can't go 10 feet down the street without passing a fast food restaurant or passing someplace where you can get something to eat. It seems kind of ironic that in our nation we would have anything resembling food insecurity, that people did not have access to nutritious food. How do you define nutritious food? Do you put fast food in a different category from nutritious food, are we talking in general about calories that are allowed, are there to make a person basic survival?
Yeah, when it comes to nutritious food, I just really think the thing to look at is the number of ingredients. And if you've got ingredients that you don't know or more than two hands worth in an item, it's probably thinking, what am I putting in my body? And is that counteracting the nutrition that I'm getting from it, even if there is the amount of protein that you want from it? What type of protein? And so I think growing, a perk of farming is that you're really getting that pure, from the earth, really simple nutrition.
And I would also like to add, there is research that shows that as food travels further distances, it means it's picked earlier in its ripening stages, and the nutritional value of those foods actually are lower. So, very real ways to qualify that.
I mean, we live in a state where there's been, and we've referred to this before, there's been a lot of agriculture over the years, a lot of wide open spaces in Kentucky. Many families have traditions of, if not farming, at least having a home garden. Is your experience that a lot of those traditions have gone away as our society has become more technological and people are so occupied with other things that we just don't take the time to grow stuff anymore, so we just depend on the supermarket chains to deliver the food?
Actually, one thing that we have found to be surprising to us even is that education is such an imperative piece of this. For instance, we have a large project called the Berea Victory Garden Blitz. Last year was our first year. This was our second annual year doing it. It's a project where in 5 days we installed 187 raised beds throughout the town. And we did that on a sliding scale. And in order to do that on a sliding scale, we had 65 fabulous, generous donors throughout the community. And what that did was allowed people who were not able to purchase, the raised beds, the soil that goes in them and all that, to give themselves access to growing in their own space, in their own yard. They could get that for as low as $25 installed, filled with soil in their yard. So that was a fantastic way to get that into the community. But after our first year, we found that a lot of people, even once they had that access, they had a raised bed in their backyard or front yard, even better, they didn't know what to do with it. They didn't know how to grow. So this year we partnered with the public library, the Madison County Public Library, and are offering an 8-month series of gardening workshops and classes once a month. And then the Berea Urban Farm, which is a project of Sustainable Berea and Sustainable Berea, are working together to add some auxiliary classes to that for the summer and fall as well, because it really is a big part of making sure that people have that access is them knowing how.
We've been talking about the concept of hunger or food insecurity, I guess we would call it. How will efforts such as urban farming make a major difference in the lives of those who are least secure in their food? Because it seems to me that those who are suffering from poverty in some fashion, people who may not have access to resources, they may not own a piece of property on which they can grow food for themselves. It seems to me that those who are in a better position are more likely to be able to improve their position, as is just in general the common nature of the way things tend to work out. How will your efforts with the Urban Farm and Sustainable Berea reach out to those who have, just don't have those resources?
Sure. The farm is a big part of that. So it is opening up land on the farm and saying, hey, if you would like to grow your own food, you can come here and grow that in this space. But there's also a bigger idea a kind of a project of the farm and a project of sustainable Brea, which we're calling the Old Town Urban Agriculture District, which we sometimes lovingly refer to it as OTWAD. So it's the Old Town Urban Ag District, OTWAD, is really trying to understand food insecurity on a smaller scale. So if you think about hunger statewide across Kentucky, it's a huge problem, and it's something that we can't address. As one farmer, I can't feed all of the people, but maybe I can feed my community. And so I think what we're trying to create through this district is creating a model that says, like, okay, the farm is a part of this district, but that also includes the households surrounding this district. So I think it's something like a 50-block area, and we've chosen it. We've said, hey, you're in this district. You have access to our land. You have access to the resources on our land, so like water and straw. So grow food here. Grow food in your yards. Let's see what we can grow together to be feeding this one space so that if it works and we realize that we can be feeding more of the people within our community, which is a community that needs food. We all need food, that we can actually pick it up and apply the same model to a neighboring neighborhood, to create food securities on a smaller scale.
Yeah, and another thing I would love to add to that is the idea of, you know, it's not all on the farmers. It's great that farmers are thought of as, you know, the main producers. But when we talk on a community scale like the Old Town Urban Agriculture District, what that does is it allows us to say, okay, we have resources of farmers, but we also have resources of the people, the human capital that is encompassed in that space. And that might mean that over on this block, we have Jane who grows too many tomatoes, and someone over here grows too many cucumbers. And if they don't know their neighbors and they don't know that that's available, some of that might actually go to waste. Where when you create a community and an educational system where people can talk and realize what is available, then we can say, hey, I'll trade you. You know, what do we have extra? What do we have space for? Maybe you're in an apartment and don't have somewhere to put in a raised bed, but I've got a big backyard right next door. And it really allows those opportunities to happen on a scale that's much more understandable for the average person.
Home gardening and urban farming, our topic on this week's Eastern Standard. We hope that you'll feel free to be part of the conversation by sending us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Give us a call, 800-621-8890. Send a tweet, post on the Facebook page or the WEKU website. But let's now bring into the conversation Ryan Cook. And Ryan is director of seedleaf.org, a Lexington-based community garden effort. And Ryan, thank you so much for being part of our program today.
I'm very glad to. Thank you.
Tell us, Ryan, about Seedleaf. What's unique or special about Seedleaf in Lexington?
Surely, yeah. Our mission is to nourish communities by growing and sharing food. We do that by installing and growing 15 free U-Pick community gardens throughout the north side of Lexington. Try to have very visible spaces. Most of them don't have any kind of fence or no concern for security, and just encouraging our neighbors to harvest what they recognize, help when they can, help us come to our Get in the Garden events to water and weed and care for a space and just make more food available for neighbors here in North Lexington.
So when we talk about a U-Pick community garden, I mean, do people sign up for a space? They claim a space that they're responsible for, or they just wander in?
Yeah.
You have no fencing, you have no security, nothing keeping them away?
That's right. There's a lot more wandering than anything. But we also have two locations where we're able to do the what we call allotment-style gardens and let people care for maybe a 4x8 space. So yeah, we're experimenting with that, but that's something that culturally makes maybe more sense in other parts of the world. And sometimes that is not respected, and people pick in parcels that they didn't work to grow in. So to have it all kind of open clarifies things often.
Where does this come from? How is it funded? How did it get established? I mean, who owns the property uh-huh. on which the garden is located? And who started this whole thing in the first place?
Yeah. So I was a part of a small church in 2007, and where we had one small garden go pretty well. I had been spending time with a local farmer in Carlisle, Kentucky, called David Wagner, and I just loved what I was experiencing out there on his farm, and I wanted to drag a bit of that into Lexington. On Highway 68, I have to drive right by a Hardee's, and it would always grieve me that I had all this, you know, spinach in the car, but my neighbors weren't able to eat as well as I could. So trying to make these little spaces productive so that we can share more healthy food. And you asked about funding, for the last 8 years, it seems to be about a third of our income is from grants, a third from individual donors, and a third from services we can sell.
So this is actually a nonprofit organization set
yes,
up
sir. Yeah.
with a structure to make it happen. How about the Berea efforts, the Berea Urban Farm and Sustainable Berea? Your efforts, where does the support and the community backing come from for these programs? First off, with the Berea Urban Farm.
Yeah, the Berea Urban Farm is actually a project of Sustainable Berea, so we are classified as a 501c3 nonprofit organization, but we really get our support from Sustainable Berea.
Yeah, the majority of our support comes from family foundations, individual donors. We are obviously working on a market. This being our first full year of production at the Berea Urban Farm, the intention is that it will eventually become self-sustaining in its ability to sell goods to create that space. But right now, we are very much funded by donors.
This is Eastern Standard, and our program is an interactive show, and I'm not all that knowledgeable about farming. I kind of grew up in the country as a kid, but I really have spent a lot of time in the city, so I don't know a lot about these matters, but I hope that we have listeners out there who have questions and stories you'd like to tell about your experiences with gardening. Do you grow a garden at home? Have you continued to grow one? Did you grow up with a garden, with folks who maintained a garden every year? What about those who've lived on farms and have now moved into the city? How have you made that transplant literally and figuratively in your life? We're interested in hearing from you on this week's program, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Write to us by email, send a tweet at wekuest, or pick up the phone and give us a call at 800-621-8890. Better yet, how can efforts such as home gardening and urban farming make a difference and contribute to something such as what Commissioner Ryan Quarles spoke about earlier in the program, the Hunger Initiative in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? How can we better our own lives and better the lives of those in our communities by growing our own? 800-621-8890. WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Our program this week, early in the summer, even not quite summer, still late spring, we're talking about home gardening and urban farming. Is your garden in? Do you have a garden? Or do you have a couple of tomato plants in pots out on the back deck? We're interested in talking about growing food for ourselves and growing food to better our communities. 800-621-8890, the number you're welcome to call with your questions, your comments, your personal stories, or send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. On the line with us is Ryan Cook, director of seedleaf.org, a Lexington-based community garden program. We have with us in the studio Abby Adams, program manager for Sustainable Berea, and Michelle Flannery, production manager for the Berea Urban Farm effort. And earlier in the program, we heard from Kentucky Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles talking about something he announced this very day on this Thursday morning, the Hunger Initiative in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. How can we make an impact on hunger in our communities as well as improve our own lives by growing our own foods? And that's what we're talking about. When we talk about gardening, for the most part, you are talking about edible gardening.
Yes.
And Ryan, feel free to jump in as well. Ryan's on the phone with us, and we can't see him, but feel free to jump in at any point with a comment.
Uh-huh.
When we talk about growing foods, how compatible are growing flowering plants and, you know, beautiful gardens that people like to do for landscaping kind of purposes and beautification as well as a growing food. Are the two compatible? Can you have a beautiful space as well as a space that's productive and feeding yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think the phrase for it is edible landscaping. And I think food and flowers pair together wonderfully. I mean, we need the flowers to attract the bees who pollinate our food. I mean, it's really one beautiful cycle. And food is beautiful. And I think just re-understanding beauty and what it means to have a beautiful front yard. If I pass a front yard with 8 raised beds in it, growing tomatoes and potatoes and cilantro and everything else under the sun, I think, wow, that house is secure and it's also beautiful flowering food.
And we were lucky enough to have Lisa Hilgenberg from the Chicago Botanic Gardens come down and speak with us and work with us on the farm and start off that class series we talked about. And they do this beautifully up at the Chicago Botanic Gardens. I remember going there and they had next to the sidewalk this area which was filled with flowers and kale intertwined together. Mm. And you wouldn't ever realize it until you read the sign or you know your plants well enough that half of what is growing there is edible, but it was just as beautiful as, you know, potted flowers that's all there was. So there definitely are ways, and there's entire books written about how to incorporate those two things together.
And Ryan Cook?
Yeah, I think, you know, we started with a concern for neighbors and what they were able to eat, but my concern has broadened to bees, and I have had a real conversion to planting more flowers, more perennial native things that would beckon pollinators and making space for butterflies, and I think it does beautify a place. So many of our gardens are in neglected spaces and parts of Lexington that have not been cared for, so just to have one, you know, bright spot on a block is kind of a happy surprise sometimes.
We do have a couple of callers on the line at 800-621-8890, and we'll get to them in just a moment. But what about, we talk about beautification and we talk about the overall environment in our communities, in our cities. There are zoning laws that I suspect that might be an issue at times. Is it legal to take out the grass in your yard and decide to grow corn and tomatoes instead?
Generally, on a scale for backyard gardening, so a single garden, that's not usually an issue unless you have HOA rules for your particular neighborhood.
But you said backyard. What about the front lawn? Okay.
What we ran into was for the Berea Urban Farm, something that is a little more large scale, considered agricultural, but not in an agricultural zone. And that is something that in our planning stages we really had to work on. We actually are just adjacent to a B1, so a business zoning area, as part of the Old Town, Berea. But we were just across the block, so we were actually in an R2 zone, which is residential. So that farming scale is not something that they were set up for. So we had to go to the zoning commission in the city and get a, I don't remember if it's called a contingency or if it was an overlay. We talked about both. I wish I remembered better right now. But we had to have a specific, you know, allowance for that. So, yes, it is definitely an issue. And there's papers written about every different city is different as far as that is concerned across the United States. So it really depends on where you live as to what that will look like in your particular city.
What about Lexington, Ryan?
Yeah, well, one thing I'm pretty pleased with here is that our city protects the rights of homeowners to keep small flocks of chickens, hens for eggs. You can't keep a rooster. That'll violate the noise ordinance, but it's really fantastic to be able to have a little source of some of your protein right here at home in some of our backyard flocks.
So growing things is nothing compared to having some chickens in the yard, huh?
Yeah, growing things is awesome, and then I think, you know, having chickens is another level. And I've found that my birds are helping me kind of take care of my garden a little bit. They do some tilling that I need them to do sometimes.
And there are no controversies, no issues with neighbors who decide that, you know, they'd rather see a green golf course style lawn than chicken feed and tomato plants in your yard.
Well, my neighbors are a little biased because sometimes I share eggs with them, so they're kind of in on it.
Okay. one way to involve the community.
Yeah, that's right.
We're talking home gardening, urban farming on this week's Eastern Standard. Let's go to the phone and talk to, is it Severn? Severn, you are on the air. Go right ahead with your question, your comment, or your story, Severn.
Well, I just wanted to say that I grew up, my mother's a gardener, and we ate out of the backyard. We had four kids and not much money, and my dad raised bees. So for me, gardening was a way of life growing up. And so when I moved out and got my own house, the first thing I wanted to do was put in a garden. And I try to inspire people who didn't grow up doing that to try it, because I think beyond just feeding yourself, it's really rewarding to get up hands dirty, like really just get in the earth, till it up, plant something, watch it grow. And then when you start to reap the harvest, you've already had so much good experience from just being outside and watching it all grow. Harvesting is always amazing, but there's so much more. Like, for me, it's just such a peaceful and happy place to be outside with my hands in the dirt. And growing up, it was a part of life for me. And people who didn't grow up that way, I just try to encourage them. Like, even my friends who live in apartments, I'm like, put a tomato in a pot. You know, it doesn't matter. Just put something out there and watch it grow. It can be so rewarding. And I just try to inspire people all the time who have never experienced that to just try it.
That's a great...
Just get out there and do it, because there's so much more to it than even eating the food.
That's a great tip. So is it just something as simple as a tomato in a pot?
Yes, absolutely. Even if you live in an apartment, stick it outside on your patio. Like, they make different types of tomatoes that are made just for that. You can do strawberries in a pot, like a hanging basket of strawberries on your deck. Totally doable.
And dessert is right there ready after dinner.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And healthy eating is always a goal. And eating out of my backyard, I love to share with my neighbors. But for me, a lot of the reward comes from getting out and getting down in the dirt and getting my hands dirty. Growing up doing it, I feel like it's just second nature to me. But people who didn't, I think, miss out on that experience of it, of just really getting out there and getting dirty. It's fun.
All right, Severn, thank you so much for your call. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, 800-621-8890. This brings us back, and we'll get to Kay, who's on the road on the way to Berea in just a few moments. But brings me back, though, to how we can expand beyond growing on our own property to improving and helping our communities. Commissioner Quarles talking about this issue of a hunger initiative in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Any ideas, any thoughts from among our guests or from our callers about how our individual agricultural productivity can be expanded to serve others in the community who may be in need?
Yeah, one thing I would like to add, I mean, I love what Severn was saying about, you know, even if you don't have the space to do a ton, do something. And it's a learning experience as well as a great way to get food. But one thing that we also love to see, besides people putting them in their personal space, is public spaces. During the Blitz, a good portion of the raised beds that we installed were in front of businesses on sidewalks next to the public library. And that's a space where generally it's the owner of the business who takes care of it, the banks. I know our first year we had a local bank that put in two raised beds and filled it with food, edibles, and not only were their employees able to take some home, but they also shared it with some of their customers. And so it was really community building. It was a place where there was food available to the public, as well as a great experience and a way to make it visible. It was all in the front where people could see it walking by. We did a whole brochure that went into the visitor's center where people could do a driving tour of all the Victory Garden raised beds around town that were visible from the street, because we would love to see them in the front yard instead of the backyard, actually. We want people to start realizing that it's acceptable, it's normal, and it's fantastic to be able to bring your community together around healthy food. So we encourage that.
And that visibility takes away the fear of growing food. So again, kind of like Severn said, you know, just saying grow anything, grow a tomato, grow a strawberry. You can do it. I mean, it's really, the dirt is amazing. You can put something in it and it grows. And so I think by seeing it and by normalizing it, you you create that message that says food happens from the ground and it happens through you and you can be a food producer. So shifting that idea of humans as consumers to humans as producers.
Let's go back to the phone. This is Eastern Standard. Our phone number, 800-621-8890. And Kay, as I mentioned, is on the road, on the way to Berea to a gardening conference in Georgia, coincidentally. Kay, you still there on the line?
I am here, and I pulled off to be safe. Wanted to speak to you. I was so excited to hear the show. I'm actually on my way to North Carolina, to Black Mountain, for a conference called Medicines from the Earth. And it's about real food and about herbs and about those wonderful natural things that the Mother Earth and God have put all around us, which really are our medicine, which is good food and clean living. And I'm involved with a children's program that emphasizes that very strongly. We have a summer camp, and we have a lot of special needs children and adults. And we garden every day. We have fresh food, and it's what we serve.
So you're suggesting that, again, beyond just basic nutrition, that you're talking about the medicinal properties of
right. I mean, herbs are food as well, and food, really, the food that we get out of gardens, I mean, the colors and the fragrances and the variety is enormous. But what we find with our kids a lot of times is that they think the salad comes out of a bag. Or that, they don't really see food grow. And we have a lot of children who come from inner city or come from special needs. Actually, the camp that I'm talking about is only about 30 minutes away from the city of Flint. And obviously, there's been a big problem in Flint with water and so on and so forth.
Okay.
And this summer, we'll be bringing 80 kids from Flint to Skyline. And they're going to be gardening. They're going to be picking fresh food. We encourage the kids to sneak a snack between meals because it's going to be pea pods or little tomatoes or a baby zucchini or something wonderful growing around them. And what we found this last summer was that the amount of salad that we served every day and fresh greens increased fivefold because the kids had their hands involved and it was their salad and their garden and their success, and they loved it. It was an exciting thing to see.
That is exciting, Kay. Thank you so much for calling in. We're really glad you fell upon our program today, and safe travels. Again, you're heading toward North Carolina. So.
Thank you. I'm headed to Black Mountain, North Carolina, for a conference called Medicines from the Earth, and it's about the qualities of food and the world around us, how it really is our healing and our medicine if we just pay attention.
Okay, we'll put that out there so our listeners can Google that up.
Right.
Kate.
And you can, thank you so much.
All right, Kate.
Still going.
Thank you. We've got another caller waiting on the line. Travel safely there. Let's talk quickly to Sue in Paint Lick. Also on the line is Ryan Cook, director of Seed Leaf. If you hear him in the background, I believe he's outside in his garden as we speak. But let's talk Sue from Paint Lick. Sue, thanks for calling in. We've got just about a minute or so for your comment or your question.
Hi. Am I on?
You are on the air, Sue.
Okay, great. Well, my husband and I moved here. We found Berea in 2007 because of Sustainable Berea. We were looking for an intentional community and focused on sustainability. And lo and behold, we happened upon Berea. We got so excited about it, we ended up moving here in 2008 and bought a little five-acre plot outside of Berea in a little neighborhood called Paint Lick. And since we've moved here, we've put about 40 raised beds in, chicken coop, and put in about 30 fruit trees, and started our own little intentional community. We have three families that live on site and share in the food that we produce, and it's working out really well. And it's especially nice because my husband and I are living on a retirement income, and which is never enough.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Sue, for sharing that story. And you're, again, as part of the Berea community. Thanks for being part of our program. Let me, in the last 2 minutes that we have of this week's Eastern Standard, turn to Ryan Cook, Abby Adams, and Michelle Flannery and ask you all, how do we get started? For those of us who are maybe kind of city slickers and not really, as I've acknowledged, not knowledgeable about growing things so much, but we just want to step into growing some things for ourselves from our apartment or from our urban dwelling. How do we move forward and get the information to begin doing that?
Well, one thing that I think is a really easy way to do that, and the reason during the Victory Garden Blitz, we do 3-foot by 5-foot raised beds, and we do that for a reason. One is for people who are new to gardening, it's not overwhelming. It's enough where you're going to get something out of it. You can get a number of meals from what you could grow in that space, but it's not going to put you in a position where you realize, this is more work than I meant. I just dug up half of my backyard and put in all this food, and I don't have time to weed it and water it and do all of those things. It's good to start with a reasonably sized sized plot. And as far as what you choose to grow, it's really what you want to eat, I think. And every single seed packet, if you turn it over, will tell you all the details of how to plant that particular seed, what kind of sun it needs, what kind, you know, water. All of that information is on the back of a seed packet. And if you really don't want to start from seed, you can buy starts. And I'll let Michelle kind of go into what might be the easiest ways to start
about
that.
About 30 seconds for Michelle and about 30 seconds for Ryan.
Sure. Starts you can get from your local greenhouse. You can just pick those up and say, I want a tomato, and I'm a little late in the season to start it. So you can just head to a nursery or someplace and grab that. I'd also just make a plug for straw bale gardening. So for those people that don't have soil or don't have the space for it, you can just get a 1-foot by 4-foot section and then just plant into the straw bale.
And Ryan, regarding seed leaf, I assume you have information on your website, seedleaf.org, where we can find out more. Sorry, we are out of time, folks, but a very fascinating conversation as we talk about home gardening and urban farming. Thanks to Ryan Cook. Thanks to Abby Adams. Thanks to Michelle Flannery for being part of the program.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you to our producers, Marissa Hempel and Brian Burkhart, for putting this week's show together. Brian, wow, why is Brian Bartlett's name blanking on me here this morning? But Brian Bartlett has been at the controls. Visit us online at weku.fm. Eastern Standard is here every Thursday morning and every Sunday on the WEKU stations.